Welcome back to the Leadership and Management Book Talk podcast. This is Art Petty trying not to laugh. Yes, this is take four of our introduction. I'm here with one of the greatest people on the planet, Wally Bock. Hello, Wally.
Hello, Art. Folks, the man could not say inimitable earlier.
I couldn't say inimitable.
He has been unable to start anything. We just have too much fun doing this.
It is a riot. You are a delight to work with. Your sense of humor and your tolerance of my inability to get this right most of the time is much appreciated. So we're here today talking about crisis leadership books. And something funny happened along the way, Wally.
Well, yeah, we started out and we thought, what can we talk about? Let's talk about crisis leadership. And then there was this virus thing. You may have read about it in the papers.
Yeah, came
stuff.
Across it.
Yeah. So, folks, I want you to know that we didn't cause this, but we did lead it by a little bit. And you're going to be reading about it right in the middle. So good luck sometimes beats good planning.
No kidding, yeah. And it was interesting. You know, we call this the Leadership and Management Book Talk podcast, and I could only come up with one business book that I actually liked for the crisis leadership category. And I'm not sure you have any today, do you?
I don't really. I thought that many good memoirs, like Teaching the Elephant to Dance and
right.
stuff, do that. But they do a whole lot of other stuff besides, and so they don't really focus. But I had the same thing happen that you did. I went looking for stuff about crisis leadership or leadership in crisis situations. And there wasn't anything on my shelf about that in business. So with one exception that relates to business, my books are from history generally, the political history.
Yeah. Same here. And you know, the good thing, it's our podcast, so we can stretch the boundaries of what we want to talk about here. As I think about crisis leadership, you know the first image that jumps to mind? And I'll never quite find any more crisis moment more profound than the image of Sandburg writing about Lincoln, able to see the fires from the Confederate Army's campfires, the smoke, while he's sitting there knowing full well that there's almost no protection in the city and that if they chose to, they could certainly invade. That moment in time when you're sitting there and you're holding the fate of a nation in your hand and you're unprotected and you can see the campfires and the smoke from the campfires of the enemy. Just a profound moment for me. Although that wasn't one of my book choices today. I thought I'd share that moment.
Well, what were your book choices, Art?
You know, I've got some interesting ones. I'm going to kick off with, I guess, my first business book. And, you know, I've mentioned it on prior podcasts. And this was Howard Schultz's book, Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul. And it was the one from the business category, the memoir type book, that I loved because of all of the hard decisions that Schultz and the Starbucks team faced at that really existential moment around the time of the last financial crisis that we had there. So I love the book. I like the way that the decisions were laid out, and I love the fact that Schultz stuck to his guns. And I didn't get the impression this was revisionist history, which so many of those business memoirs can be. This was, hey, he really stared these things down and had to deal with them against popular opinion of his advisors and a lot of other people.
You know, I think the thing about crisis leadership is there's really two ways to come at it. There's crisis leadership when it's of an incident, and that your Starbucks thing is like that. And they're probably having that again since.
Yeah, right. Sure.
In many places, all the Starbucks are closed right now.
Right.
But there's also the dealing with it over a great deal of time, the way that Lincoln did, as you pointed out. That wasn't a, we got to make one decision. That's what, we got to make decision after decision after decision over a period of years.
Right.
And the two ways to get to that, I think, are really where crisis leadership happens. It's, you have to be able to do both, but the techniques are different.
Sure, sure, no doubt. So that was the only one that, you know, reasonably fits in the business memoir category. All the rest of mine are from from history. And you'll notice a theme when I run through them. There's this theme of resilience, which is so critical for business leaders and frankly for all of us in this time of crisis that we're dealing with now, which is finding those stores of resilience to carry us through and navigate the hardships that are literally unfolding in front of us. So that's a big theme in all of my books there. But before we get to those, let's hear about one of yours.
Well, my first one, you'll love the title. It's right on. It's Leadership in Turbulent Times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Doris Kearns Goodwin. It is specifically about what we're talking about. It's about the longer frame. But I have a qualified recommendation on it.
Okay.
And it's qualified in two ways. The book, for those of you who haven't read it or know it, looks at four U.S. presidents, Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, FDR, and Lyndon Johnson. Now, that's good enough right there. The major theme for all of that is that you don't suddenly become prepared to deal with a great crisis. Yes, the great crisis can call it up, but you don't come prepared for that. You have to prepare for years ahead of time. And the way that you deal with the crisis comes out of your youth, your raising, your experiences, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great book. What are my reservations?
You got two qualifiers here. What are the reservations?
I got two qualifiers. The first one is that there's a section where she tries to draw leadership lessons, and I thought that was just weak. I think you can read enough in the biographies and the biographical sketches to get the lessons that you need that you can translate to your world.
Well, yeah, I think that's such a great point. That was the point, the first time, is Lincoln the first one featured in that book? I don't remember. At any rate,
yes.
I read Lincoln first. And she gets to extracting the leadership lessons, and it went from this great kind of historical biography writing to something that we might read on any one of 10,000 blog posts on leadership. And it didn't make sense. So you know what? I didn't continue with her book, and I appreciate her. In fact, I've got a recommendation from her as well. But yeah, that point threw me.
Okay, my second point is don't read the part about Lyndon Johnson. There's a couple of reasons for that. One is I don't think she is nearly the historian that she is with the other three.
Okay.
She was part of the Johnson administration.
She was biased, to say the least.
She worked closely with him. She has ideas about his particular policies and stuff, and she doesn't have enough distance on the man or what he did to write in the same way. I'm not saying it's necessarily bad, but it's not the same quality or depth as the other three, and it's not making use of historical perspective as she does in the other three.
Interesting.
So two reservations.
Okay.
Don't read the explicit leadership recommendations because she doesn't know that much about that stuff. She can give you the historical stuff. You can use it to connect it to your world. Second, let the Johnson part go. There's plenty of time to read about him years from now.
And if you really want to read about Johnson, read Cato's 28,000 page multi-part series on it. Interesting. Well, let me follow on with my Doris Kearns Goodwin pick as well. And this one is No Ordinary Time: Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, the Home Front in World War II. So I do something that I enjoy a lot, which is that I pick a book and my dad and I read the book at the same time. And we kind of compare notes and converse. And, you know, both of us got into this book. Both of us are students of history of World War II and thought that this was one of the best works of that era because it gives you such an incredibly intimate look at what was going on in the White House, every day in the White House during that point in time. So we skipped a lot of course, the early Roosevelt history and so forth and so on. It's literally just during the wartime. Churchill, I didn't realize, was such a regular occupant. I'm not sure if he spent more time living in the White House or living in London during the war, because that was so critical.
It was safer in Washington.
Well, and that's how he was going to protect England, was making sure Washington was involved. But Just a beautiful, well-written book. I can't say enough about it. And it, what it did is it made the crisis and the decisions and the gravity of the decisions feel very real. Like a great author, you're immersed in the moment. You're immersed in the time. So No Ordinary Time is definitely gets my vote.
Okay, I understand why that's a great history book. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just a humble preacher's boy trying to make his way in the world here. And I got a business to run. So what's the big lesson I should take out of that book for my work?
Well, yeah, you didn't tell me you were going to give me a quiz, Wally. You know, it's been a few years since I've read the book, so I'm recommending it based on memory. I think that the decisions that Roosevelt had to make early on with Lend-Lease, the decisions that he had to make to support Churchill in England at the risk of being impeached, because what he was doing was arguably illegal for a period of time, the courage that it took to do that and the approach that he went about it, to me, is the biggest part of that history with him. So I'll take that away, because this gave you a really intimate view of what he was going through and how he agonized over those decisions, which goes back to the fact that when you're leading in times of crisis, you're going to make some calls that are really difficult, really challenging, and everything you've ever done before is what prepares you for that moment in time.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you alluded to as you went through that is that some of the decisions you make early on set the course for things that you do later.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, you have to make commitments sometimes when nobody else sees the importance of them but you.
Well said. Well said. So, great question. I can't wait to quiz you now. What's next on your list?
Well, next on my list is as close to a business book as I'm going to get. It's called The Art of Action by Stephen Bungay.
Okay.
And it is about the transformation of the military and the lessons for other types of organizations. He goes back to Frederick the Great's Prussian army, which basically everybody lined up and did exactly what they were told.
Mm-hmm.
Centers on the transformation of the German army under von Moltke the Elder, from which we get all kinds of things that we now refer to the mission order, which is considered to be standard practice and which is in fact doctrine in NATO and in all of the U.S. armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I recommend it is it's about active leadership. It's about closing the gaps, as he says, between strategy and tactics, between tactics and application. And it's how you apply those lessons from the really intense kind of leadership that the military has to business and other activities.
Mm-hmm.
And it does that better than any book that I know of. It's not a new book, and the lessons aren't new, but both the book and the lessons, I think, have been neglected. This came out maybe 10 years ago.
Sounds like it should be required reading in a lot of areas. Yeah.
It's one of those, for me, it's one of the books that I recommend to people and they say, I've never heard of it. And most of the books I recommend, people who read business books know, they don't know this one. And I'm not sure why. I'm not sure if it's, you know, the way the publisher promoted it or, you know, or what.
Okay.
But it is a good, deep book. If you like history, too, and if you like military history, it's an even better book. But you'll get stuff out of this that you can use in terms of preparing. That's the thing that I saw between Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, mm-hmm. Leadership in Turbulent Times, and the Bungay book, is you have to get ready. You have to do things ahead of time that make you able to lead,
right?
Whether those are organizational things or building character.
Good. Yeah. Nice testament. I've not read it and I can't wait to check it out. So thank you for that great addition there. So I've got three that are in the category of resilience. And the first one I'll start with, and again, true confessions, haven't read it since I was in high school, was the Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And I was kind of surprised you've never read it.
Nope, never. I've never read any Solzhenitsyn.
You and haven't read A Day in the Life of A Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich?
Not a bit.
A short classic. So, you know, the Solzhenitsyn book is one that I'd actually love to revisit. Of course, if it's his time in the gulag, in the prisons there. It's about resilience and survival. His particular book is also effectively attempting to damn the political system that was known as communism. So, and it is very, very powerful in that area. So depending upon what you're reading it for, the political perspective or the resilience perspective, it gives you a lot of both. I think it's a classic, and I think it's something that we need to bring back and have more folks read out there. My other one was, of two more, Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And I mean, that book is such an incredible classic on resilience in the concentration camps of World War II. I think you've probably spent more time with that book than I have. So what's your take on Man's Search for Meaning?
Two things. One is, it seems to me that more people refer to it or quote it than have actually read it. I think it's particularly powerful if you read it from front to back. Mm-hmm. Because he gives you the sense of going into despair and then working his way out. And you don't get that from a quote here and there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the basic core of the book is the thing that the Stoics talk about. It's the thing that the Christian martyrs had. It's, you can take everything away from me, but you can't take my soul.
Right,
you can't take
right.
my spirit. I make my own decisions. And that's trite a lot of the time. It's not trite when you read about it in those camps.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is, if you're going to read it through. Don't dip into it. I've done it both ways, but I'll take my ability to dip into it now because I've read it all the way through first.
Yeah, right, right. Well, and you made an interesting comment when we were talking about these before the show, which was that's a book that you've got to invest a little time in because you're going to stop frequently and you're going to think. You're going to think about it.
Yeah, that's true. It's one of those, you put the book down and you stare into the middle distance and you try to absorb this stuff. One of the hard things, Hart is a young man compared to me. Many of my friends when I were growing up had parents who went through those camps.
Mm-hmm.
One of my friend's mothers had one of the Auschwitz tattoos that she must have gotten when she was like 12 or 13,
right.
from the age that she was. And even with that, even with hearing some of the stories, even with having people, their family friends who went through Hitler's camps, not the concentration camps, but mm-hmm. the other types of prisoners that there were,
right.
I was absolutely unprepared for what Frankl did to me in the book. It was really, really powerful, and it will be really powerful for you, I think, too.
Yeah, I agree. So fabulous. Well, my third one is more of a recent popular book, Unbroken, a World War II story of survival, resilience, and redemption by Laura Hillenbrand about Louis Zamperini, which is, you know, not only was a best-selling book, but it has been made into a movie. I haven't seen the movie. Have you?
I haven't either seen the movie or read the book.
Oh, okay.
So there you have it.
Yeah.
You've got me on two today.
Yeah. So it just, you know, and again, I think that one's fairly familiar in pop culture, but a truly remarkable story of just a lot of hardship that was taken. So those are the resilience theme is important to me. And I think that it's got to be important to people now as we're navigating this. So you think of the people, I was on a call this morning with a group of my clients. We did like everyone else, we're doing Zoom calls now. And we did a group session on Zoom and we talked about this notion of how do we ourselves build up our store of resilience and how do we help our employees, our family members, whoever it happens to be, especially in the face of what is momentarily turning to be an economic catastrophe. And by the way, that pales in comparison to anybody who's dealing with human loss in this circumstance. So it's just bad all of the way around. We're going to need a good dose of resilience. And I think these three books that we highlighted here, that I just highlighted, certainly can go to that. Not necessarily giving you the direct lessons on how to lead, but maybe how to survive.
Well, yeah, let me pick up on that a little bit, because I have a different theme that I went through when I did the research.
Okay.
And it's not an or resilience, it's an and. The theme of preparation, the theme of we bring to the present what we've done in the past and and family and stuff. There's a lot that we're going to face now that we had no way to prepare for specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But the character lessons that you've got, the all of that in Goodwin's book, the ideas that all of those three presidents highlighted that they got in their youth and what they got growing up. In Bungay's book, it's more like organizations. How did these organizations transform? What did they do that made them resilient, in your word later on? I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay. No, I buy it completely. I like your perspective. All right. So what else do you have for us?
I have one book that is one of my all-time favorites, and I don't know if I've mentioned it before or not. It's called Thinking in Time, The Uses of History for Decision Makers.
No, you've not. And you've been holding out on us.
I have, and it was for my own personal gain, but now that I must share. I came to pick this book because I was looking for something that was more like operational. You know, here I am, I'm Howard Schultz, and I'm in this meeting.
Right.
How do I approach this stuff? And this book is by Richard Neustadt and Ernest May. Neustadt and May both taught at Harvard, which is where they based a course on this book. Neustadt was in the room at the Cuban Missile Crisis, which has a lot of stuff in this about it. But it is a good, clear, what we learned from Vietnam was, well, okay, let's think about that.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know what we learned from, I just blanked on him. The Munich Peace in Our Time, Chamberlain.
Yeah, Neville Chamberlain, right.
Neville or Chamberlain. What do we learn from that? Well, let's take a look at that. It's a way to analyze historical occasions, precedents, and so forth to see how they relate to what you're doing now. Mm-hmm. And it's the only book I know like that. It's the only operational book out of any of the books that we've recommended. It has zip to do with preparation and nothing to do with resilience, but it's a very good decision-making and crisis book.
Interesting. All right. Nice choice. Nice kind of diversification there.
Readers can't see this, but I'm showing Art the cover.
Thinking in Time, Neustadt and Ernest R. May. Richard E. Neustadt and Ernest R. May. Okay. Well, we'll share the link, of course, all these links in the show notes for the podcast. So I'm down to my last one. It's literally fairly recently published. It's on the bestseller list right now. It's from the author Eric Larson. It's called The Splendid and the Vile, a saga of Churchill family and defiance during the Blitz. I had mentioned to you that I'm reading this. I can't stop reading it. It takes place from that moment in time when Chamberlain was sacked and Churchill was installed as prime minister, to about a year and a half or so later during, the peak of the Blitz and the bombing of London. And it's written from journals and private papers, newly released papers, newly discovered papers. And Larson, he's a good author. He's a good writer. And he does a brilliant job kind of weaving you into the moment so you feel like you're part of Churchill's story right there. I'm recommending it, Wally.
Well, he's a great writer. Now, we talked about this before the show, but Art has been pushing me to read that book. And I don't normally read books till they've been out 6 months or so. My brother-in-law, who is a deep and wide reader, has been pushing me to read that book. I've read other Larson books that I really love, but I'm still waiting, guys.
You need to let it ferment.
Actually, what I'm doing, and this I think is important to people who listen to us, Eric Larson is a very readable writer. Mm-hmm. He writes the kind of books that you keep turning the page, mm-hmm. and you wonder why the sun is coming up when you haven't gone to bed yet. that kind of writer. And I try to keep one of that kind of writer in the drawer in my nightstand, because I get to a point where I'm tired of reading the good stuff, you know,
yeah, right,
and the
right.
stuff that's, you know, good for my soul and everything. And I just want something that I can just blitz through, but I don't particularly want to read a spy novel.
Yeah.
So
now hold
on. I haven't
done a show on spy novels. What's wrong with spy novels?
We can do spy novels.
I think
we can do spy novels. Yeah.
We need to tie leadership lessons into the spy novels, though.
Fair enough. Okay. I think the Larson book is great.
Good.
And I will read it, but I haven't yet.
I'll look forward to discussing with you about 2 years from now when you finally read it, okay?
Deal.
So I'm out of books today, Wally. How about you?
I'm not out of books, but I'm out of books to talk about. I have a whole room of them right behind me.
So in preparation for this podcast, I actually did an Amazon search on crisis management, crisis leadership. You know, hundreds of books showed up, none of which I've read, all purporting to be books with expertise on leading in a crisis and managing in a crisis. Have you read any of those? Because I haven't.
No, I haven't. The book that I go to for management in a crisis is not around anymore. Hans Lilje was a bishop of Hanover,
okay.
and a friend of my dad's. And for years, I thought of him as just another one of my father's fat German pastor friends. And I
father
happened
have
to pick
a lot
up,
of a lot of fat.
Well, he seemed to me. I was young and a bit smart mouthy.
Okay, I got you.
Stuff. But he would visit us whenever he was in New York, and I happened to pick up a book in a used bookstore called The Valley of the Shadow, which is his story about his time in prison under Hitler,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, begins the morning they break in to interrupt his sermon preparation.
Ooh.
And take him away.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember asking him at one, as only a smart-ass 14-year-old could do, I remember asking him, well, what did you do then when they took you away? And he leaned forward to me and he said, when they knock on your door, it is too late to prepare.
Ooh.
So
that's a profound
thing
on a lot of levels, Wally.
Yeah, it is. He was a very cool guy. Not anything we're going to talk about today because we haven't got time. But that was the quote that was in my head as I was picking my books.
Say that again. When they knock on the door?
When they knock on your door, it's too late to prepare.
I think that's a great quote to leave us with. It's a little bit haunting, to say the least, but maybe apropos given the crisis and the challenges we're dealing with now.
Well, we don't know what it's going to be like on the other side yet.
Exactly.
So,
So for everyone under quarantine and housebound, we gave you a whole selection of I think outstanding choices to read to support your growth, your learning, the development of your resilience, and that just kind of steeling your resolve to navigate this, because it's not
right. And Amazon is delivering them all electronically.
There you go. There you go.
Don't count on paper books, folks.
Don't
They're
count out your local
time.
Library who delivers electronic books as well, many times for free with a
yes.
library card. I'm a frequent customer. Wally, this was fun. It's a sobering topic, but it was wonderful to share the insights with you. Thanks for the great recommendations. We'll see you next time.
Well, I got some from you too, and I'm going to go and find my Viktor Frankl again, I think.
Okay. All right. Sounds good, my friend. See you on the next show.
Take care.